Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Ashling Wehner. Onc Live On Air is a podcast from Onc Live, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Onc Live covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Matthew P. Goetz, MD, and Grace Chung, MD, on research they presented at the 2022 San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium. Goetz is a consultant in the Division of Medical Oncology in the Department of Oncology, as well as a professor of oncology and a professor of pharmacology at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota. Chung is a hematology oncology fellow at Mayo Clinic. In our exclusive interview, Drs. Goetz and Chung discussed the potential for adjuvant endocrine therapy emission in patients with estrogen receptor-positive breast cancer who have a pathologic complete response to neoadjuvant chemotherapy, how far the breast cancer treatment landscape has come in the past few decades, and how this research confirms the importance of adjuvant endocrine therapy in patients with ER-positive breast cancer with residual disease.
My name is Dr. Grace Chung, and I am a Hem-Onc Fellow at Mayo Clinic in Rochester.
Hi there, my name is Dr. Matthew Goetz. I'm a professor of oncology and pharmacology at the Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota.
Thank you, Dr. Goetz and Dr. Chung, for being here with us today. To start off, what was the rationale for this research?
So we know that ER-positive breast cancer patients, adjuvant endocrine therapy is the standard of care for about 5 to 10 years. However, for patients who have neoadjuvant chemotherapy and achieve a pathologic complete response, meaning they have no residual disease after completion of chemotherapy, we don't really know exactly if adjuvant endocrine therapy is necessary in this population. So the rationale of our study was to evaluate adjuvant endocrine therapy admission in ER-positive early-stage breast cancer patients who received neoadjuvant chemotherapy and stratified based on pathologic complete response versus those who had residual disease.
Could you elaborate on this patient population and the unmet need there?
Absolutely. So the patient population we derived from was from the National Cancer Database, or NCDB. We looked at women who had an early stage 1-3 diagnosis of ER-positive breast cancer, and all these individuals had received neoadjuvant chemotherapy prior to undergoing surgical resection for their tumors. Based off that, we looked at two molecular subtypes of breast cancer, so ER-positive, HER2-negative, as well as ER-positive, HER2-positive breast cancers. And then we also looked at patients who were able to achieve a pathologic complete response versus those who had residual disease and stratified those subgroups to look at overall survival.
What efficacy data were shared at SABCS, and were any of these findings particularly interesting or surprising to you?
We found that patients who had ER-positive, HER2-positive cancers were actually less likely to proceed with adjuvant endocrine therapy, which was statistically significant. We had approximately 30% of patients who decided to omit adjuvant endocrine therapy in that subgroup, versus we only had about 10% of patients in the ER-positive, HER2-negative group who omitted adjuvant endocrine therapy. Additionally, the patients who had ER-positive, HER2-positive breast cancers were more likely to have had a pathologic complete response on the order of about 30 to 40% versus in the ER-positive, HER2-negative group, there was only a pCR rate of about 10%. So when we looked at specifically overall survival and stratifying patients based off pathCR and residual disease versus those who had ER-positive, HER2-negative, and ER-positive, HER2-positive disease, we found that patients who had residual disease, as expected, actually had a significant decrease in overall survival if they had adjuvant endocrine therapy admission. However, the most interesting results was that in patients who achieve a pathCR in both molecular subtypes, we actually found that patients had no difference in overall survival if they had adjuvant endocrine therapy versus those who omitted endocrine therapy. I think the most interesting result that we got is that they actually were quite a few people who chose to omit adjuvant endocrine therapy, and this was a little higher than we otherwise would have expected. This negatively impacted overall survival. So ultimately, patients who do have residual disease, they would benefit from proceeding with adjuvant endocrine therapy. But in those patients who have PATCR, potentially we could consider adjuvant endocrine therapy omission.
Looking at this database, obviously it's very powerful. We don't have recurrence data, but we have survival data. And I think there's a couple things for me as a clinician that really stood out. Number one is that there's a lot of people that are not taking adjuvant endocrine therapy. The findings that there was no difference in survival for those patients that did or did not take endocrine therapy in the setting of PATHCR is hypothesis generating. At this point, I'm not ready to change my practice and tell patients that they cannot or omit endocrine therapy. It's notable that those patients still had a trend towards a worse overall survival if they omitted endocrine therapy, that is, those that had a PATHCR. It wasn't statistically significant. Conversely, those patients who had residual disease after neoadjuvant chemotherapy, omitting endocrine therapy had a substantial effect, a detriment to overall survival. As I look back at really all the studies that had been done back in the 1980s and 1990s, where we compared endocrine therapy versus placebo, and we saw that endocrine therapy reduced the risk for recurrence by 50%, prolonged overall survival by 35%. We have an opportunity in this study just to replicate those data, which is if you don't take endocrine therapy, you had about a 35% higher risk of death if you had residual disease. So this is really important to clinicians. It's very important to patients. Another thing that I oftentimes think about as a clinician is that when patients go through their neoadjuvant therapy, there's a group of patients that are tired. They've gone through sometimes 20 weeks of therapy, and they oftentimes think the hard part of their treatment is over, and they really don't have to do anything else. And I always tell my patients that the hard part is actually starting now. That is, after you finish your chemotherapy, because you have to take this pill every day. And that's going to actually be one of the most important factors. And that's indeed what we see here in this study, is that those patients that elected to omit endocrine therapy had a substantial detriment to their overall survival.
In general, how might these findings better inform the neoadjuvant and adjuvant spaces moving forward?
I think this has strong implications in the neoadjuvant setting, meaning that clearly patients potentially would benefit from achieving a PATCR who have ER-positive breast cancer. And so more research is needed to be done to look into how we can get patients who have ER-positive early-stage breast cancer into PATCR other than using our conventional chemotherapy, which is clearly not going to get us into a PATCR since rates are approximately 10% for that subgroup. Additionally, in the adjuvant endocrine therapy space, I think this, as Dr. Goetz mentioned, is really hypothesis generating that we could consider possibly de-escalation of adjuvant endocrine therapy in a small subgroup of patients with ER-positive breast cancer who do achieve a PATCR, since there really isn't a whole lot of difference between adjuvant endocrine therapy and those who choose to omit it.
You know, we're in this era of looking at escalation, where we need to escalate, and de-escalate, where we possibly could de-escalate. And we always have to remember that adjuvant endocrine therapy provides a number of benefits. It reduces the risk for recurrence in the ipsilateral breast. It reduces the chance of developing a contralateral breast cancer, and of course reduces the risk of developing distant metastases. And so for those patients that have had a PATHCR, for example, if a woman has had a bilateral mastectomy, an important question going forward is what is the role of endocrine therapy in that group of patients? Again, this is hypothesis generating, and it will require prospective studies. But for a woman who has an intact breast, she's had breast conservation, there clearly is still benefit of endocrine therapy in terms of reducing the risk of a contralateral breast cancer. I'm not ready to recommend omission of endocrine therapy for these patients.
Looking forward, what novel drugs in ongoing trials right now could shift practice if approved in the next year or so?
Well, you know, the major drug that has shifted practice just in the last year in this space has been adjuvant abemaciclib. And at this particular meeting, we actually saw the update from the MONARCH-E trial. And this was an important update because this study evaluated 2 years of adjuvant abemaciclib. There's been a lot of concerns that the benefit of a CDK4/6 inhibitor in the adjuvant setting may only be there when you're actually taking the drug. So if you stop the drug, that's, you know, benefit might go away. And that's clearly been disproven now by the data that we have from the monarchy. So what we see is from the monarchy in the most recent analysis presented here at the meeting by Dr. Stephen Johnston is that the benefit of adjuvant abemaciclib is actually maintained and actually is deepened or increased over time after patients have completely gone off the drug. What we're seeing in that setting is for very, very high-risk women, and especially for these patients that I think of that have residual disease. For example, they've been treated with neoadjuvant chemotherapy. They have residual ER-positive, HER2-negative breast cancer. Adjuvant abemaciclib is really leading to a substantial improvement in invasive disease-free survival as well as distant relapse-free survival. So this is something that's really good news for our patients who have that very high risk for recurrence because they have substantial residual disease after neoadjuvant chemotherapy.
What is your main message for colleagues based on this research?
I think what really this research highlights is the importance of continuing to counsel our patients as clinicians that if they do have residual disease, even if they have HER2-positive, ER-positive breast cancer, that there is a strong benefit in their favor if they proceed and get adjuvant endocrine therapy. And so we realize that there's a huge treatment burden for these patients with HER2-positive disease, both in the neoadjuvant and adjuvant settings for HER2-directed therapies, but that additional adjuvant endocrine therapy is something that we should counsel our patients more on and trying to increase their adherence rates and hopefully improve their overall survival.
And to follow up with that, I think what's quite interesting here is that the benefit of endocrine therapy in terms of reducing mortality for patients who had residual disease was the same whether you had ER-positive, HER2-positive, or ER-positive, HER2-negative. And so there is some view out there that, well, gee, I had HER2-positive breast cancer, it's ER-positive, but I've been treated with trastuzumab and I don't need this endocrine therapy. But there's extensive data about the role of ER and HER2 crosstalk and how blocking one receptor is not sufficient. For ER-positive, HER2-positive breast cancer, clearly endocrine therapy plays a major role in terms of its ability to reduce the risk of death. That's a really important take-home point for patients, is that endocrine therapy is critically important.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at OncLive and at OncLiveSOSS. On Facebook, like us at OncLive and OncLive State of the Science Summit, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.